So I'm going to speak very briefly on the perspective I come with, which is that of someone coming from a 40,000-foot view, looking at global air quality data from across the world, and also someone who's an outsider. So I'll be looking at it broadly, not so granularly, and you should always take someone's advice or thoughts with a grain of salt when they're coming from that perspective. So my organization, OpenAQ, as was mentioned, is an open air quality platform that aggregates air quality data from government monitoring sources from 47 countries, as was mentioned. But the thing is, we are not just community-driven in terms of what purpose we want this open data to serve, but also community-built. So OpenAQ is an organization, but there's not OpenAQ did not build our data platform. It's been built by people around the world who thought there's tons of government air quality data produced across the world, tons of money and time invested by governments to measure this data and go to a lot of work to do that, but the data is often contained within a particular silo. If it is open to some degree, it's in a different format from country to country, and this is very limiting for lots of use cases of the data. So community members across the world work together on an open source platform to make this data available to anyone. So I think it's really interesting that a non-traditional group of people, organization, is opening up this data because it doesn't really fit within the purview of current traditional organizations. And the driver of our community is something we term air inequality. It's something I think essentially Elliot mentioned in his talk when he mentioned the social injustice of air pollution. We often hear that air quality should be talked about in terms of environmental justice, and that's true. But I think the scale of the global problem of air pollution that's responsible for something, depending on where you look at stats, 1 out of 8 deaths in the world deserves its own terms in terms of the social injustice it wreaks on the population. So that's the perspective I'll be speaking from. I'm going to talk more from our community perspective than the data perspective. There was the handout that you got with the flyer as you entered shows some of the interpretation of data from the UK and other places from our system, and that's all openly available and accessible to you if you want to search through that data some more. But one of the things we do besides just the data is go to communities and interact with communities both virtually and in person on air inequality issues. So we see lots of examples and perspectives of how communities are fighting air pollution. And there's a lot of similarities. There's many disparate communities, but they're kind of facing similar issues and taking similar approaches and finding similar obstacles. So I thought I'd share just a couple, again, 40,000-foot views of how we've seen the UK air quality community relative to other groups across the world, similarities and dissimilarities. So just two real quick things. One thing is we've, and I guess I should also mention, one of the reasons we focus so much on community is that you can have all the data or you can have all the bold policies in the world, but they don't matter unless you have a community that is giving the political will to actually put those in place. And more importantly than just having that political will in the first place is sustaining it. So we find community is the cornerstone of what we do, more so than the data that originally got us into doing this work. Or policies that we've seen. It's really the community that fires this political will. And the communities that are strongest at doing this are ones that are diverse and interconnected, meaning you have media folks talking to scientists who are talking to policy folks and deeply invested in that work. So with that context, for the UK, what we have noticed is that there is a tremendously highly engaged in diverse ecosystem of air quality players. This is very visible from even being afar, just looking at the media, certainly when I've visited as well, whether that's in academia, at King's College, with coverage by the media in The Guardian, activism through Clean Air London, legal groups, legal lobbying groups like Client Earth. Not only are they deeply invested in the issue, but they're also interconnected with each other and know about each other. That's not purposely trying to be nice, but it's actually spectacular, and you don't see that in most places that are fighting extreme air inequality, and it's extremely powerful. The question I would put to you all is how to sustain that. I'm here in part to learn how exactly that has formed in the first place, but also how will this sustain itself going forward? Because again, to really push air pollution policies forward, it's a long-term effort, it's not a one-time thing. There needs to be a way to sustain that highly engaged community. The other thing I would note is that what we have noticed in many places, and this is definitely one of them, is that there does tend to be a funding gap for air pollution works especially. Last time I was here, I talked to one of the world's largest funders of human health research. And I said, oh, so what is your air pollution portfolio look like? And they said, air pollution who? we don't really fund air pollution work. It's not exactly medical research. It's not exactly what we focus on. Air pollution is not really a health issue. And then, of course, I was like, well, one out of eight people in the world, that's definitely a health issue. And they agreed, and they said really what it was is that traditionally, historically, it wasn't within their purview to cover air pollution and health studies. It just wasn't on their radar. Their history was rooted in a slightly different field. And you see this in a lot of places around the world, whether it's foundations or government agencies, that air pollution work can kind of fall through the cracks, depending on whether an environmental agency takes charge of it or if it's a health organization or something falls in between. So finding ways to fund air pollution work, I think, is pretty critical and something that a lot of organizations I have talked to, both private sector, public sector, and academic here in the UK, I've heard a bunch from. So with that, I will end my comments. Thank you.